It's blazing hot outside. You get in your car to turn on the AC to get cold air pumping, but it blows hot air out. This issue is commonly caused by low refrigerant due to leaks in the AC system. You want an easy, all-in-one solution that will restore the cold air in no time. AC Pro Recharge Kits make restoring cold air easy for even those with zero DIY experience in less than 10 minutes. Save time and money versus going to a shop by picking up an AC Pro Recharge Kit today. Be a pro with AC Pro.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the New York Yankees official podcast.
Just on the radio alone, I call five World Series. And Yankee fans certainly have an expectation, because there's 27 championships, that every year you're going to get one. You know, you could look up anything you want, but I think that a team's broadcaster should have that team in their soul. You can't add Juan Soto and say you're not better. But in order to get a player like Juan Soto, you got to give up something that hurts. And the Yankees gave up a really good package. But I think that Soto, either batting ahead of Judge or behind Judge, it's going to be unbelievable. You know, what scares me is that quite literally I'm on the air live 7 or 8 hours a day. At some point, I'm going to say something really bad and probably get fired for it. But it hasn't happened in 32 years, so I keep my fingers crossed that it doesn't happen. I got a call early last year. Would you be interested in doing this cruise? I said, Yankee fans are going to be on it? Yeah, absolutely. Let's do it. And it's been more than I could have imagined.
Hello, hello, and welcome to one final 2023 episode of the New York Yankees official podcast. I'm John Schwartz. I am the deputy editor for Yankees Magazine. I am back on dry land after a really exciting week aboard the Celebrity Apex with Expedia Cruises and many former members of the New York Yankees as part of the Legends of Baseball cruise. We are going to talk about that with the YES Network's and ESPN Radio's Michael Kay. But right now, joining me across the table, we have our executive editor, Nathan Makaborski. How you doing, Nate?
Hey, John. Good to see you back here in the Bronx. So you got your feet back under you?
I'm working on it still. Still a little shaky, you know. We definitely sailed through some pretty interesting weather, and I learned just how strong my stomach is. That was good to know, but it's good to be back.
Well, this is certainly one of the more interesting podcast episodes that we've had, so I think people are going to enjoy this one.
So let's get to the conversation with Michael Kay. When we're done with that, we can talk about new Yankee Juan Soto and certainly about the upcoming Pinstripe Bowl here at Yankee Stadium next week between the University of Miami and Rutgers University. But first, here's Michael Kay. Joining me right now aboard the Celebrity Apex, we have TV, radio, Yankees voice, Michael Kay. How you doing, Michael?
I'm great. How you doing?
I'm doing really great. So you've been doing this for several decades right now. You get started. What is the possible thought in your head that, you know, someday there's going to be a Legends of Baseball cruise and I'm going to be one of the featured guests on this thing?
Well, I'm blown away. I mean, I'm blown away by my whole career. I mean, this is something I wanted to do since I was 9. So this year on opening day, I'll start my 33rd season announcing the Yankees. And then I got a call, you know, early last year. Would you be interested in doing this cruise? I said, Yankee fans are going to be on it? Yeah, absolutely. Let's do it. And it's been more than I could have imagined.
And there's guys on here who, you know, well, guys who you are involved in calling moments from their lives and guys who you've seen old timers day and things like that. I don't know. For me, it's just very almost heartwarming to just see the way that Yankees family works. You know, it doesn't matter if you played for the Yankees for 2 years or if you played for the Yankees your entire career. You know, these guys just all share that aspect of it, right?
Well, I just love when old Yankees or older Yankees, ex-Yankees get together, because I see it on Old Timers Day. And when they're together, the stories are what they were when they played, and everybody, when they're together, they're young again. You know, Mickey Rivers and Ron Bloomberg, you know, they're talking like it's 1976, and Cecil Fielder and Orlando are joking, and Chris Chambliss and Greg Nettles. And I think that's what this is all about. And I think the fans should get involved as well, because the fans are so important to the whole process. And now to get to interact with these players that they watched and they experienced those moments just like the players did, I think that adds a special magic to it all.
I think you're right. And I think that one of the interesting things to me about the Yankees is there's almost a little bit of a
curse of their success in a sense, right? Because not only do you expect it, but it makes it sometimes hard to contextualize some of the things you're seeing in the present, right? You're calling every one of these things. Some of these moments that you're seeing right now, you don't know going into the 2022 season, you're about to call 62 home runs for Aaron Judge, but one and then one and then one and then one. Real history is being made every one of those games in a sense. It doesn't necessarily always announce itself to you.
Well, you know, sometimes, you know, you go to other cities and obviously other teams coming to the stadium and you talk with broadcasters who are just looking to have their team get into the playoffs, to have that experience of getting into the playoffs. And, you know, just on the radio alone, I call five World Series. I mean, you know, you got Gary Cohen, who's an unbelievable announcer for the Mets, and, you know, they haven't won since 86. And Yankee fans certainly have an expectation, because there's 27 championships, that every year you're going to get one. I think the game has changed a lot. So the people that play that what would George do game, he wouldn't do the same thing now because he wouldn't be allowed to do the same thing because things have changed. The way the game is policed in terms of spending money and losing draft picks and salary taxes and stuff like that, that's something that the Steinbrenner family now, particularly Hal, they have to manage. But still, the thing that makes the Yankees different is that they're in it every year. Even last year when they were 82-80, when that season started, all of us thought they had a chance to win the World Series. Not many teams have an opportunity to do that. There might be five or six, but even those five or six in baseball, they don't always make the playoffs. The Yankees have been an over 500 team for 30 years now. So I've been fortunate, and you know, we talked about it earlier in the cruise, and my favorite calls. The fact that I even can sit there and like wonder which one it was shows you how many opportunities I've had and John Sterling has had. It's just amazing. They give you so many great chances to make these great calls and be part of history.
You started as a writer, obviously. You know, like I do, back, you know, you used to be pulling down the Total Baseball or the Baseball Encyclopedia from it and trying to, you know, make sense of someone's career in that way. Now, we all have phones in our pockets that if we want to watch Chris Chambliss' 1976 home run, it'll just come up, right? Mm-hmm. When you do that, you're the voice on a lot of these more contemporary moments. That just has to be surreal. I mean, are you able to disconnect yourself from that in a sense? Yeah. When you're watching a moment and it's like, oh, right, I'm also the person narrating this?
No, I am able to disconnect because I consider myself so fortunate. Like, I can't even believe that the kid that grew up, you know, 10 minutes from Yankee Stadium is actually doing this. You know, there were four male voices in my house growing up. My dad, Bill White, Frank Messer, and Phil Rizzuto. And, you know, that's what I grew up listening to on Pix 11. And now to just even be part of that lineage is just, it's just amazing to me. And, you know, sometimes, like my son, who's a big baseball fan, will go on YouTube and, you know, he'll look at some moments and go, that's you. Were you there? I was there. And it's kind of amazing that I was there. And believe me, there's not a day that goes by that I don't appreciate that I was there.
But you mentioned growing up in the Bronx, obviously. You know, you talk about Bobby Mercer. Yankees fans certainly have you, you know, talking to them. They have John Sterling talk to them, another, you know, local guy, grew up Upper East Side of Manhattan. How meaningful is it, do you think? Because, look, plenty of people will take any job, any port in the storm, whatever. You know, to have two people as so prominently as the voice of the Yankees who have been part of that fold and are local in that way, I think it keeps it tight-knit. It keeps it close, in a sense.
I think it's really important for any team's broadcaster, and it doesn't always happen that way. No. Because, you know, you could look up anything you want. You know, everything's at our disposal now. But I think that a team's broadcaster should have that team in their soul. And, you know, there are guys that do great jobs that go to other cities and they just immerse themselves in the history. But I lived Horace Clark. I lived Jerry Kenny. I lived Gene Michael. And John's the same way. John goes back even further. And I think that's important because it's an institutional memory. Oh, that reminds me of this, or that reminds me of Sparky Lyle, or that reminds me. I think that's important to have it in your soul. And every now and then I'll say something on the air. And I'll say, oh, that reminds me of, you know, when Gene Michael played shortstop. And then my producer, Troy, will talk into my ear and go, in your soul, in your soul. And I take that as the ultimate compliment because, again, you could study and you could learn team's history. But unless you lived it, it's hard to do. And the Yankees are fortunate, you know, because the radio and the TV guy grew up in New York. And then Ryan Rucco, who does games on Yes, same deal. Grew up a Yankee fan. So it doesn't mean that you have to be a homer. It doesn't mean that you have to root for the team. But it means that you have to have them in your heart and you have to live some of those moments.
You know, Oswaldo mentioned it, though, the other day. He said it. You know, he can watch the video of his first home run and you're a part of it. You know, he hears your voice and he connects you with that. When you see these young kids coming up and you know that you share that connection with them, is that intimidating ever? Is there ever a sense of, man, like, you know, I'm a part of this guy's life now forever. Whatever happens of his career, I have that connection with him.
Well, when the young guys come up now, you know, those that listen to my radio show, I'm very morbid. So I go, gee, I wonder if I'm going to be alive when Anthony Volpe's done playing. You know, that's what enters my head with the young guys. But I mentioned this earlier in the cruise, and I don't know why I felt like this, and I've tried to break it down. You know, the Aaron Judge run to 62, I never felt such pressure. Maybe it's because of the increased influence of social media. Everybody becomes a critic. Everybody, Phil Mushnick or you know, Andrew Marchand, I get it. But I just didn't want to mess it up for him. So when he looks at his 62nd home run, he calls it up when he's like 50 years old. I don't want somebody stumbling over the call. It had nothing to do with me. I'm not part of it. I'm just a little bit of a frame that he painted this wonderful picture. I felt so much pressure that I didn't want to mess it up for him. And then I look back at some of, you know, I was lucky, even when I was on the radio, I only did 3 innings of play-by-play, but for some reason, I called most of Derek's big moments. And when Derek got into the Hall of Fame and we were in the same room, I said, thank you for letting me piggyback on just a little part of your greatness. He goes, no, thank you for actually making it sound better than it was. But, you know, he's super humble. But, I do feel a responsibility, but I don't start feeling that responsibility when they first come up. When they're about to do something great and it's a big moment, like it's the last out of a no-hitter or a perfect game, you don't want to mess that up.
I think one of the most special things for me on this cruise, again, as an observer, was watching the way Oswaldo Cabrera connected with some of these old-timers, some of these, you know, guys who retired decades ago. And the thing I keep going back to is, this is a kid who no one knows what this year holds for him, let alone the rest of his career. But if he wants to look 30 years into the future right now, he'll always be able to do this in a sense. I think that's something that you get from being a Yankee. Cecil Fielder right now is not on a Detroit Tigers cruise. He's on a New York Yankees cruise. And I think that there's just something so meaningful about the connection and basically the lifetime membership that you get when you start playing here.
Well, I think you could use the phrase once a Yankee, always a Yankee. The thing with Cabrera that's different, and I'm sure that everybody that's in this room listening to this, there aren't a lot like him.
Yes.
His ability to interact, his overall sweetness, his lack of ego. I mean, you don't really see that in modern day athletes. You just don't. And he's one of those guys that when you walk into the clubhouse on the road or at Yankee Stadium, he comes up and says, hi, how you doing? That's not the norm. I just want everybody to know that's not the norm. He is a special, special kid. Somebody like that, you want to see him do well. You know, I look at the roster as it's developing now. I don't know how he fits. I hope that he does. I don't know if he will. But he has made his mark in his short time here just because of how sweet and classy and graceful he is. You know, because you're a Yankee. You know, you could carry yourself differently, you know, but I think everybody here probably had a moment where they interacted with him and they felt like he was really listening. You know, he's one of these guys when he says, how you doing? He really wants to know how you're doing. You know, most people go, how you doing? And they're just waiting for the exit. You know, okay, I don't want to hear how you doing. I just felt it was the right thing to say. He actually says, how you doing? And he's engaged and he's invested in the answer. He's like that with the media. He's like that with fans, and I think it's great. So you do root for him to do good things.
So you brought it up, so kind of let's go there. Obviously, the big news around the Yankees as we record this, Juan Soto's now a Yankee. I mean, from a writer's perspective, certainly exciting to have a fun story to write about. I'm sure for the fans, it's just wild. When you look at that transaction, what do you think that does for the 2024 Yankees that was missing in 2023?
Well, obviously, they didn't hit enough last year. I think they were 29th in offense. The only team worse was Oakland, and Oakland's not trying. So that kind of tells you how much they struggled. You know, I've had debates on my radio show with people. He doesn't make them a World Series winner. Well, yeah, they don't have enough pitching yet. They're not done as of this taping. But you can't add Juan Soto and say you're not better. So, I mean, if you look at the advanced metrics, you know, usually has a wins above replacement of 5 or 6. You look at what they ran out in left field last year. If you give them 6 more wins, they're 88 from last year, and they're probably in the playoffs. So, I you know, it hurt giving up what they gave up, particularly King. And Drew Thorpe looks like he could be a good pitcher. But King's going to be special. But in order to get a player like Juan Soto, you got to give up something that hurts. And the Yankees gave up a really good package of 4 pitchers in Higashioka. But I think that Soto, either batting ahead of Judge or behind Judge, it's going to be unbelievable. It's going to make Judge a better player because they're going to have to pitch to him every now and then. Because there's nobody the Yankees ran out the last couple of years behind Judge that a pitcher wouldn't rather pitch to that guy than Judge. Now, you still would rather probably pitch to Soto than Judge, but you're going to have to think about it. So Judge is going to see more pitches to hit.
I'll point out, though, the comments you made about Oswaldo Cabrera and the way he is. If you had asked me to name 2 other people on the 2023 Yankees, I would have said that about Michael King and Kyle Higashioka are exactly that way, too. Those are big losses for the team, obviously, in different ways. And look, I don't think that Higashioka had a role on this team, obviously. Michael King sure did. But, you know, those are tough guys to lose in the clubhouse.
It's funny. I don't usually collect, you know, the players' numbers, but Susan Waldman does. So when those 2 guys got traded, I said, can you give me their numbers? And I texted both of them thanking them for how they treated me. I mean, they're great, great guys. And both of them sent back beautiful text messages, and it's just what they're about. You know, Buck Showalter once told me about Derek Jeter. He met Derek Jeter when the Yankees drafted him. And then they sent Derek up to the radio booth to be interviewed by me and John. And so the next day I went down to Buck. I said, well, what do you think of the kid they drafted in the first round? He said, I mean, the scouts say he's a good player. I've never seen it. He goes, but I'll tell you one thing. I guarantee you this today. I said, what? He said, he'll never, ever, ever embarrass the New York Yankees. I said, well, how do you know that? He goes, all you have to do is meet the parents. And that's, you see that with Judge. You see that with Michael King. You see that with Higashioka. If you're well-raised, you're really going to have to go off the reservation to be a bad seed. So those people are tremendous, and they will be lost. You know, it'll be a loss to the media, who likes dealing with them, a loss to their teammates because they all love those guys. And but again, you're going to have to swallow hard to get a player like Juan Soto.
There's a price. That's just the way it is. Michael, you watch just about every Yankees game every year, and I get that athletes aren't allowed to make excuses. Sports teams aren't allowed to make excuses. I think it's reasonable to say that the Yankees were destroyed by injuries last year. I don't think that is necessarily an excuse. I think that if the Yankees get more from Carlos Rodon, I think if the Yankees get more from Nestor Cortez, I think if Judge doesn't lose a battle against the right field wall at Dodger Stadium, you know, all these things, is there an ability to say that without it being an excuse? Or at the end of the day, is it just you are what your record is?
It seems like it's a new thing where the cliche is, well, there's no such thing as excuses. And to me, that's nonsense. You can call them reasons then. There are excuses, and it doesn't mean it's a cop-out. If you want to look back on the 2023 Yankees and say, why did this happen? Well, I'll tell you why. Judge got hurt. Cortez got hurt. Rodon was hurt at the beginning of the year. People were falling by the wayside. Stanton got hurt, also wasn't hitting well when he played. Rizzo got hurt. You can't tell me if those things don't happen that the Yankees are not a playoff team. Now, there are certainly negative things about the team and the way it was built, and there's some holes there in age, the fact that they weren't very athletic in a sport now that's trying to become more athletic. But I never buy that nonsense, that cliche that, well, there's no such thing as excuses. Really, there are excuses and there are reasons, and I just gave you a couple of them why 2023 didn't work out. Now, I wasn't a big believer in running it back and seeing, well, let's see if everything goes well again, because the Yankees, unfortunately, over the last couple of years have had a lot of problems with injuries, so you can't ever say that it's not going to happen. But you go out and you get a Soto, shows you that the Yankees are not happy with the way they were built. Shows you that, you know, they're going out and trying to improve their pitching. They know exactly what went wrong last year, but I think the biggest thing were the injuries.
At this point in your career, obviously, I mean, like, you know, the Yankees like the back of your hand, but there's a different visitor coming in every week. What's your game day preparation like at this point?
Well, when I do the radio show, obviously I'm doing the radio show, let's say from Yankee Stadium. So I get to the ballpark about 2:00. Radio show starts at 3:00. So from 2 to 3, I'm looking over some stuff that I might want to talk about. And then throughout the radio broadcast, I'm writing stuff. If you're watching the simulcast, you could see that I'm writing stuff, looking stuff up on the computer, writing down my lineup sheet. So I get off the air from the radio show at 6:23. I run upstairs to the booth. Maybe I might grab two chicken fingers, something like that. And then I tape the open with either David or Paul or John or Jeff. Then I take a breath for about 10 minutes and we go on live at 7 o'clock. One thing Jim Cott once told me, and I think it's a really good thing for all young broadcasters. You know, somebody asked him, well, what are you going to talk about today on the game? And he goes, well, what's the first pitch? And then what did the first batter do? You kind of have to, you know, react to everything that's happening. You can't really plan a baseball game. You know, you should be ready and know background stories if the game is slow or something comes up. But in terms of like planning for what you're going to do, you know, it's not the smart way to approach it. But, you know, John Sterling once had a great line as only John Sterling could have. I was coming from newspapers, so I'd get to the ballpark really early. And then I kept doing the same thing even when I was broadcasting. This was before the radio show. And I said to John once, I said, how come you get to the ballpark about 6 o'clock and I'm getting to the ballpark about 2:30? My voice is with me whenever I show up. So, and then he also said, which is a true line, he goes, I've been preparing for this my whole life. And that's what I meant by institutional memory. If it's in your soul and you follow the Yankees your whole life, you know, you should be okay doing a game.
So again, we're doing this on the Celebrity Apex. We have people in the room right now who are part of the Legends of Baseball cruise package they bought from Expedia Cruises. I think that most of the people here, I'm guessing, if you're here for this podcast, you're more excited to see Michael and our guests than you necessarily are me. I can tell you, though, I'm predominantly a writer. I deal with not knowing what to say, not knowing what to write, not knowing any of this stuff. You are constantly with a microphone in front of you. What happens if you just say to yourself, I don't have an opinion about that. I don't care.
Yeah, unfortunately, that's not the rules of engagement, especially on the radio. You always have to have something to say. But, you know, what scares me is that, you know, quite literally, I'm on the air live during the baseball season 7 or 8 hours a day in a row. At some point, I'm going to say something really bad and probably get fired for it. But it hasn't happened in 32 years, so I keep my fingers crossed that it doesn't happen.
My wife will sometimes joke that I'll fall into what she calls podcast voice, where maybe, like, you know, the tenor of the voice changes a little bit. And when you're talking to your wife, when you're talking to your kids, do you ever feel like, you know what, actually, I'm at home right now and I'm not in the YES Network studio and I'm talking the wrong way, I'm code shifting maybe a little bit?
You know what, the one thing that people say, I don't have like John Sterling's voice, and that's really John's voice. That's how he talks in real life. And I talk, the way I'm talking right now is the way I talk in real life. I've talked to all of you, so I don't change anything. The funny part is that, like, when I'll, like, my wife will drag me out to have dinner with people, and I don't talk a lot. And they go, you seem, well, first of all, I am shy. People don't believe that. And then second of all, I'm talked out a lot. So I like to just listen to people. I'm curious about people's stories rather than talking about myself. So, you know, obviously, there's a lot of don't do that to the kids and stuff like that. But, yeah, I guess I don't run out of things to say.
That's not bad. I have to bring it up because I saw that something really special happened on this cruise. And I don't know. I mean, a lot of special things have happened. But one thing that happened is that Michael Kay tried an egg. And I heard it didn't go great. But I want to know, honestly, what is the most, besides maybe an egg, you have an all-you-can-eat buffet. You have restaurants that will serve you anything you want. What is the most interesting thing that you chose to eat on this cruise?
The most interesting thing?
What's the most different?
That egg.
I guess, though. Yeah, there you go.
I mean, otherwise, I've had hamburgers and steak the whole time and some of the pizza in the Ocean View. Yeah, I'm a pathetic eater. Unfortunately, it's rubbed off on my daughter, Callie. My son, though, tries everything. He's like Jody. But the biggest question I've gotten about the egg story, you know, why'd you go with the egg white? That's the worst part of the egg. Well, I felt it was the most benign part of the egg. You know, the one with no taste. So I said, just give me an egg white omelet with bacon because I love bacon. And I figured that the bacon would overwhelm the egg white. I figured wrong. And as I posted on Twitter or X and Instagram, I was right for 62 years. Eggs are not great. So I don't think I'll be going down that path again.
I think they go through something like 40 million eggs on the ship every day.
Yeah,
it's comforting to know that one of them was Michael K.
Don't blame me.
It does tie in the previous answer you gave, though. One of the most interesting things about getting started in the business when you're in press boxes for the first time is you'll be sitting there on that line getting food, and suddenly you just realize the guy behind you is the broadcaster, and you're hearing the guy you're used to, you know, listen, tell you about the incredible feats of baseball you're watching, trying to order a hamburger. And it's just these weird things. Like, I know that voice. Or when you hear, you talked about, you know, the guys you grew up listening to, and you hear them on the phone suddenly, you know, having a fight with their wife or something like that. And it's just like, it's a little disorienting.
I remember when I started as a writer, and I was covering I was filling in for somebody. And there's some fans that might know. There's Dick Young's probably the most famous sports columnist of all time. And he was covering the game with me for the Post. And he said to me, like, fourth inning, he goes, "You want a hot dog?" And I said, I'll go get you one. He goes, no, I'm going to get it. And I said, wow, Dick Young is getting me a hot dog. Now, since food always seems to be a thing following around. So I used to eat two hot dogs a day at the ballpark. Especially the old Yankee Stadium hot dogs were unbelievable. And I think like third year I was covering the Yankees, I looked up. I was 265 pounds. I said, this is not good. I have not had a hot dog in 30 years. Because I don't do anything in moderation.
I'm getting that impression.
Yeah. So I figured if I'm going to keep eating them, I'm going to keep eating them. I have two a day and I'm going to just be disgusting. I'm still disgusting, but I'm a thinner version of disgusting. So I have not had a hot dog in over 30 years.
Well, Michael, I think it's time to open up the room a little bit here. So what I'm going to ask, yeah, if you want to come up, there's a microphone sitting right here, right in this seat, this open seat right here. Just come on up and just please introduce yourself first before you ask a question. And then we'll get to a couple of these.
Ken Schwartz. Mike, I had a question for you. I grew up at the same time you did and remember all those same players in addition to Fritz Peterson, Mike Kekich, and Mel Stottlemyre. And they were, and the announcers were great. But Marty Appel, he stopped me in my shoes the other day when he mentioned you in the same breath as Mel Allen. What did that feel like?
Well, first of all, I thought Marty had been drinking. I heard that same thing.
It's a cruise. It's easy to fall into that trap.
I've always said this, you know, like people introduce me and they introduce John as the voice of the Yankees. And I feel very uncomfortable because I always say there's one voice of the Yankees, Mel Allen. Everybody else just renting the title. So somebody will be after me, somebody will be after John. But Mel Allen, I mean, he was the first guy broadcasting the Yankees. So even to be mentioned in the same breath as those people is very, very humbling. I don't think it's warranted or earned, but it's nice that people think that way.
Hi, my name is Ed Blome. And my question for you, Michael, is that obviously you were a writer first and then converted to radio and then to television. Can you speak to about that conversion? Because effectively it is two different fields. Did you have any great apprehension or were you very confident going in? And who may have been your greatest influence into becoming a broadcaster?
You know, just the three guys I mentioned before, you know, there were years that I watched or listened to every single Yankee game, every one, much to the dismay of my parents. Where's this going? I don't understand. You know, it's hard to become the Yankee announcer. But those guys influenced me in that way. I didn't really follow other sports that much when I was really young. So it was all baseball. So it was Rizzuto, White, and Messer. Just the feel of their broadcast was like three buddies talking. That was a big deal. I didn't feel that much of a strain going from the writing to the radio. I mean, I was in over my head the first year. You know, especially doing the play-by-play. The analysis, I was okay. But the play-by-play, that's an acquired taste. But going from the radio to the TV was probably the biggest adjustment because, you know, one of the things I was known for with the 10 years I did on the radio was I described the uniforms. And when John Filippelli hired me, he said, okay, you can't describe the uniforms anymore. I said, why? He said, because we can see them. So I think that when a radio guy goes to TV, probably the biggest adjustment is that you talk too much. Because you have to describe everything on radio. TV is just let the pictures do the talking for you. So that was the biggest adjustment. And that took me a couple of years just to feel comfortable. You know, silence is an important weapon in TV. You know, sometimes you could talk too much, but just let the pictures and the ambiance take over. And that was probably the biggest adjustment.
Hello, I'm Sarah Heimberger, Michael K's biggest fan.
Probably bigger than my wife, yeah.
boy. My question is, if you were to bring back Center Stage, would you consider doing that as a podcast?
I think the visual aspect of it is important. It would have to be like a podcast with pictures.
Michael's slumming it on a podcast right now. I just want you to know. Like, I mean,
yeah, I've never really done a podcast. I mean, I've been a guest on a podcast, but people have asked me, and I just don't have the mental bandwidth. But it's strange, Sarah, because COVID kind of like really killed Center Stage, because first of all, we couldn't do it because of no audience. And then it just Zoom became such a thing that people don't want to sit down for an hour and a half anymore and be interviewed. So I'd like to revitalize it in some way, but I don't know if it's going to happen. I miss it too.
Well, Michael, thank you so much for taking some time on our day at sea here on the Celebrity Apex. To everyone joining us in the room today, thank you guys too. And enjoy the end of this cruise, and hope to see you back here soon.
Can't wait. Thanks, everybody. Thank you so much.
Hi, this is Oswaldo Cabrera. You're listening to the New York Yankees official podcast.
This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
Hey, this is Giancarlo Stanton. You're listening to the New York Yankees official podcast.
So, Nate, while I was the very lucky representative of our department to be on board the Celebrity Apex as part of the Legends of Baseball cruise, I hope I gave you a sense of at least one part of the experience during that conversation with Michael Kay.
Really cool, John. I mean, we've gotten to do so many fun trips over our time here working for Yankees Magazine. This is certainly one of the more unique ones that any of us have ever done. Really cool that you got to do this, and you know, probably an experience that you'll remember forever, I would think.
Definitely. You know, I joke. I mean, the reality is, first off, my entire professional career has been in baseball, whether Major League Baseball or the Yankees. So I have certainly gotten to do and see a lot of cool things in my life. But, you know, I joked with a lot of people over the last week, certainly friends from back home who couldn't believe that this was a work trip. You know, I also spend more than my share of time in like Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, and things like that. The Western Caribbean, it was nice. It was a nice way to spend a week, Nate.
You alluded to some of the weather that you hit down there. Were there any rough seas or anything like that, or was it pretty smooth sailing?
You know what? The weather was not amazing. When you want to talk about the ultimate in first world problems, having to dodge some raindrops by going inside on a luxury cruise liner, a new luxury cruise liner, which the Celebrity Apex certainly is, again, I should not be cried for. I was fine. I availed myself of the mini bars, restaurants, and other entertainment on board. But we definitely hit some of the wildest weather, both on land during the shore excursions in Belize. My wife and I mean, just almost drowned, as it turned out. And in Cozumel, we got the experience of watching Mickey Rivers and Ron Bloomberg yell and scream that they would never leave the boat again as we ran through what was clearly like the closest I've ever been to an actual monsoon. You know, and it was definitely choppy as we sailed along. But, you know, we held it together and just made the experience more fun.
So give me a sense of what it was like on the boat. Is this is the entire clientele all there for the Yankees, or are there other people who don't care about the Yankees on this boat?
So this was the first voyage of the Legends of Baseball cruise. It was a package put together by Expedia Cruises, Carol Wood, and Rob Steinfeld, the point person there. He did it with Celebrity. This was a regular Celebrity cruise. There were, I mean, I think it holds some 3,000 people. I don't know exactly how many people were on board, but, you know, it certainly seemed full. And our group had about 185 or 200 people in it, plus, you know, a bunch of former Yankees, including, you know, I mean, let me just rattle them off here. Chris Chambliss, Greg Nettles, Cecil Fielder, Jeff Nelson, Orlando Hernandez.
Man, every guy you just named, like, immediately, like, a super memorable moment comes to mind, right? For, like, each one of these guys.
Yeah, I mean, I forget who I said. Ron Bloomberg, Mickey Rivers, Oswaldo Cabrera was there, which was a fun treat for a lot of people there to meet a current Yankee. And
Michael Kay was there. Marty Appel was there. I'm nervous that I am leaving someone out right now, and I'm going to feel terrible about it, but I'm sure I will remember it at some point and with horror mention them. But it was just a wonderful group. And I got to say, one of the craziest things about this experience was, you know, we've all been, I mean, this was obviously one of the weirder ones because we were at sea for a week. But, you know, we've all been in situations where players are making appearances, right? And that stuff is really, look, we need you to do X, Y, and Z from, you know, 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. And every other minute, you do whatever you want. And usually what that means is at 1 p.m. or 1:01 p.m., they are darting as far as they can away from the situation. And that's not a knock on these guys. You know, their time is valuable. And when I tell you, every one of the people from, you know, every one of the VIPs on the Legends of Baseball cruise, they had access to areas on the ship that us commoners on the Celebrity Apex did not. But the number of times you would just see like El Duque just eating in the main buffet, or Bloomberg and Mickey Rivers just like yelling and screaming, "Hey guys, come sit with us. We got a table. Come join us over here," and everything like that. And the best example I would give of this is in Cozumel. There was a event that the Legends of Baseball cruise ran. So, you know, everyone, the other shore excursions, people did their own thing. This one, the Legends of Baseball cruise had a beach club, a really nice, it's called the Paradise Beach Club. And each of the players, each of the VIPs there had a cabana. And, you know, there were the rules of engagement, if you will. You know, you're welcome to go up to these guys. You're welcome to talk to them if you're part of the group. Also respect them, you know. If one of them's sleeping, don't tap them on the shoulder. But really, just basic humanity stuff, right? My expectation getting there was that these guys were going to hang in their cabanas, you know, drink a couple of cold beverages, and head right back for the boat at the moment. Suddenly, and I don't know how this happened, it was fairly organic, someone started a wiffle ball game over in the corner. And it started out with just, you know, El Duque kind of pitching to a bunch of people, and, you know.
Does he still got the leg kick?
He does not. We asked him about it. He said his knees can't do it anymore. And, you know, everyone kind of taking in their cuts a little bit. Ron Bloomberg was really, at this point, running the show. Mickey Rivers is calling balls and strikes. Suddenly, like, you just watched, though, as, like, Jeff Nelson came tearing across the sand because he heard it was going on. And now all the players are involved. And it becomes this full-on thing where, you know, everyone, even the people not part of our group at the beach club, were all just, like, observing and wondering what's... Because you're literally watching, including, mind you, a current Yankee, Oswaldo Cabrera, playing wiffle ball with all these people. And... like, that was the message for me of this whole thing. The number of times that these players were interacting with the people on this trip in ways that they didn't have to, it was pretty remarkable. I think everyone who went on it, you know, they all just had smiles on the entire time because, man, like, they got so much more than I think they expected. And look, they're doing it again next year. They were taking signups already. You can go to legendsofbaseballcruise.com and look what they have planned, but it was a pretty awesome experience.
Amazing. Like I said, I'm so glad for you that you got to experience it. Looking forward to hearing some of the other interviews that you conducted while you were down there, and the story that I'm sure you're going to be working on for Yankees Magazine. I mean, I had a good day down in Nashville with Clay Holmes, but I think you might have me beat as far as off-season work trips go.
Yeah, it's going to be hard to top this one for a long time. It was because it was just so bizarre. And I'm not like a huge cruise person normally. I enjoy the amenities, certainly, but it's not when I'm thinking of a vacation, it's never historically been like my first idea. But man, this was just so rewarding in so many ways. And one thing that I keep going back to, and over the next couple of weeks, you know, you're going to hear more of the interviews that we did on board, as you just mentioned. But, you know, Chris Chambliss said something to me at one point, which is they see each other not that infrequently, but it's almost always just a day where, you know, they fly in, do their signings or whatever, and then fly out. And yeah, they share stories and interact, whatever, but, you know, that's kind of what it usually is. And they were having dinner together every night, and not because they had to, because, like, I mean, they wanted to. And, you know, you would see in different restaurants, different people having different, like, it wasn't just like everything was like one group table where they were doing it. You know, it was clearly there was freedom. They were doing the things they wanted to do. And for me, again, to be very clear, I was not paying as a fan to go on this. I was there working, but I also was not one of the VIPs on board, certainly. My eyes were just open the whole time. And the thing I kept seeing was just joy and real excitement. And One thing that I personally kept going back to is, and that I'm planning on writing about, is the way that this is essentially the reward. You know, that it doesn't matter if you have all the gold gloves, or if you are in Monument Park, or if you have all the rings. You're a part of the family, and this is what you get to do. And where that was most meaningful to me, and because here's two examples of it where it'll branch off, if you don't mind. You have Cecil Fielder, who, I mean, what was he, a Yankee for less than two full seasons, I think, if I'm not mistaken. And obviously he won here, and that's a big thing. Yeah. He won, and he acknowledges that that's a big thing. But you don't think of Cecil Fielder, if you go to Wikipedia, I'm guessing, I haven't done it right now, but I'm assuming the picture is going to be him in a Tigers uniform. But when he's here, he's a Yankee. And so where I kept going to was Oswaldo Cabrera. Who knows what his career holds? You know, I mean, frankly, the Yankees just in the last 2 weeks have picked up Juan Soto, Trent Grisham, and Alex Verdugo. You know, I mean, he and I talked about this. It's a little harder to see where he fits. It's obviously a good thing that he's so versatile. But if I'm him, and he acknowledged that this is how he's thinking, I'm looking at this and I'm saying, 20 years from now, 30 years from now, I don't know what's going to happen in between that time. But I know I can do this. I know that I'll always be welcomed as a member of this family in this way. And just me watching him learn that was extraordinary. And it was very rewarding for me on a human level.
It's a really special fraternity to be a part of. And, you know, we talk about it on Old Timers Day every year when we see the way that the crowd reacts. You know, not just to the big guys, the Hall of Famers and the guys in Monument Park, but the guys who, you know, maybe didn't have the greatest career, but they gave everything they had, and they gained fans by the way they went about their business, and maybe they had a big moment or something like that, but it is something that stays with them forever and is super special, and yeah, really cool that you got to see it in this environment. You know, it's just so different than anything we've really gotten to write about before.
Yeah, it was awesome. And hey, look, I mean, you heard from Kay too. I mean, Michael Kay is a guy who he's seen a lot. You know, he's been here for a while. He's seen things here. Lord knows, around the New York sports, there's not a single New York sports event that if he wanted to go and sit, you know, in prime seats, that he wouldn't be able very easily to go. And he was just the same. What, I mean, the man tried an egg. Like, you know, he really extended himself in some truly remarkable ways.
How about you, John? You know, usually when either you or I get back from these work trips, one of the questions we ask each other is what was the best thing you ate? Did you try anything new? Was there anything that stood out that you ate during this excursion?
I'm not sure if I should admit this. I definitely tried a lot of beverages I've never tried before, which I enjoy. Man, the food was so good. So obviously, I don't know if you've been on a cruise, you know, there's certainly the main dining rooms and the buffets and everything there is of an incredibly high standard. And one of the famous things about cruises is that if ever you're having trouble deciding what to get off the menu, the waiter will just say, here, I will bring both of them to you. And certainly the waiters on the Celebrity Apex delivered in that regard. But I will tell you, man, there was one specialty restaurant on this ship. It's called Eden. My wife and I went there on, I think, the same night that we went to Belize. And I'm not exaggerating when I say it's up there with the best meals of my life. Like, truly, 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 my wife and I just kind of left there, just jaws on the ground. And I feel like I'm giving an ad campaign here for Celebrity Apex. My wife has celiac. Mm-hmm. And so anytime we travel, it's always a little bit of a stressful thing in advance of, like, making sure there's going to be food for her to eat. And my God, every single place we went, every single, whether from the buffet to the restaurants and everything like that, it was, you know, there was never a moment when she had to worry. She would tell the waiter, she would tell the manager, and boom, it was good eating.
Awesome. What'd you get there? What'd you get?
I will say, you know, you went to Nashville, which is one of my favorite eating cities in the country. So, you know, the timing might have been but man, what did I get? I had everything. Literally, there's not a single thing. The answer to everything you're guessing is yes. So it's a fine way to spend a week, my man.
Well, maybe I'll be so fortunate someday. Never been on a cruise, but after hearing these stories, I'm certainly a lot more open to the idea.
No, and look, I mean,
you know, I'm joking about Michael Kay eating an egg, but it really, like, I don't know, you know, there's times that even though he's one of the VIPs there and certainly at a much different level of, you know, fame and renown, certainly than I am, you know, I think he was kind of just like excited watching some of the stuff too. He's used to being an observer also, in a sense. He's used to trying to think about the things he sees as a observer and an analyst more than maybe a participant. And, you know, we both just kind of felt the same way. You know, we see a lot of stuff around here. We see things. We somewhat know these guys. And, you know, watching the way that these fans were interacting with them the whole time, watching the way these guys were interacting with each other, it was a pretty special thing that the folks at Celebrity and Expedia built. And I just, you know, look, I mean, anytime you do something like this, I'm sure there were some people who were frustrated about certain things. I'm sure that, you know, not everything was sunshine and roses for the people organizing it. I can tell you from my vantage point, anything that went wrong was invisible.
That's good.
And yeah, it felt really good watching the first one be the success, because who knows, as this thing was being planned, you know, but I spoke to a lot of people there as Rob Steinfeld was making pitches for all the discount offers they would give if you would sign up for the next year. And most people I spoke to there said, yep, yeah, we're booked for next year.
Awesome. Well, it sounds like a very special trip, and it'll be a special story in Yankees Magazine. And there's been a lot of special things going on around here in the Bronx. Never a dull moment. There's no off season around here. So were you away when the Juan Soto thing became official?
Nope. I was on dry land for that.
Okay.
And it was...
Because everywhere I've gone since, that's the first thing anybody wants to talk about is, can you believe Juan Soto is going to be in pinstripes next year?
So two things about that. First, before we get to Juan Soto, the first thing I was away for, because this was really the first day of the trip, Michael Kay, we were all sitting together in the theater as they were kind of introducing all the players. And, you know, I had gotten this on my phone about a minute before Kay started speaking, but it was Michael Kay who informed all the members of this cruise ship that Shohei Ohtani had just signed a $700 million deal. So, you know, that was a fairly interesting thing. Soto happened a little before that. It was really interesting, the whole Soto thing, though, because it's one of the biggest deals that I can remember since I've worked here for the Yankees. But there was 3 days leading up to it where it just seemed so certain it was going to happen that it almost got anticlimactic for that reason. Mm-hmm. When you had to remind yourself, this is monumental.
Yeah. I mean, you guys discussed it, and I don't disagree that you got to give up something that's going to hurt a little bit to get a player back like Juan Soto. But just what a talent to be bringing here. I'm just so excited. It's seared into my brain watching him in that, what was it, 2019 World Series for Washington. He was just so impressive, the way this guy battles against the best pitchers in baseball. It's so exciting. And so, like I said, everywhere I've gone, the holiday parties or wherever, Yankees fans are just so excited about this guy for very good reason.
And again, this goes back to something that Michael and I were discussing too. You know, we can pick apart the 2023 Yankees and the problems that made themselves clear as the season went on, and really even before the season started, you know, as some of these guys didn't even get through spring training. So, you know, we can look, obviously, right now in the offseason, you know, everything's perfect, right? You know, who knows how it's going to play out? But I go back to 2019 to 2020 offseason, which obviously then turned into the very weird 2020 season. You could look at that team and say the top target that team needed was Gerrit Cole. And Hal Steinbrenner and Brian Cashman did everything necessary, everything possible to bring in Gerrit Cole. Does that mean the Yankees won the World Series right after that? No. But this team has shown that it will do what it takes to get that massive piece when it's available and when it's possible. And whatever happens the rest of this offseason, look, there's a lot of balls still in the air. I think that whether it's before Christmas or whether it's after New Year, whenever it is, I think there's going to be some dominoes that start falling pretty quickly. And a lot of stuff, you know, who knows where these guys are going to land, but, you know, you got to strike, you know, and the Yankees struck. Juan Soto was available. It was a big price to give up. Drew Thorpe is, you know, certainly looks like he's going to be an excellent pitcher. Michael King, not only a great pitcher, but great guy, just absolute
wonderful person. You know, the young pitchers that were part of the deal, look, I mean, they've shown that they can play in New York, and it's hard to give up things like that. And I mean, look, I don't think Kyle Higashioka has a role on the 2024 Yankees. I think that's a good thing for the Yankees that Austin Wells and Jose Trevino should be there. But Kyle Higashioka was the last Yankee who had been part of the team when the old Yankee Stadium existed. You know, that's how long he's been here. So it's a big package and it's tough, but Juan Soto's a Yankee right now. Juan Soto is probably batting behind Aaron Judge right now.
Yeah. You know, one of the things I'm excited about too is that when you watch the Yankees and the hitters, you know, obviously they had their struggles in 2023, but they're all so locked in. You know, you just see them in the dugout, always talking to each other, looking at the iPad. They're locked in on the pitcher who's out there, and they're talking strategy. And I feel like he's going to bring so much to the team in that regard. He's just such a professional, good hitter. Obviously, left-handed bat, which is huge for us. Super high on base percentage. And what I always like to, when we get a new player, go back and look at their minor league numbers and look how, you know, just at what their path was to the majors. And it's crazy how little time Juan Soto needed before he got called up. I think there was an injury in the outfield in Washington in 2019 that, kind of forced their hand a little bit early. He had played like 122 games in the minors, something like that. You know, not even a full season. But his numbers were off the charts. I think his OPS was like 1,200 or something like that. It's crazy. And so they brought him up, didn't know, you know, how long it would be for. And, he stuck because he's just that good of a hitter. And before you know it, he's in the World Series leading the Washington Nationals to a world championship, essentially as a teenager.
Which is why, I mean, when you look at him now and you can't believe how young he is, well, that's why. Because he was ready so young.
Yeah. So I just think he's going to bring everything we needed. You know, he's the kind of the, I don't want to say the missing piece, because I know there are some other pieces that need to get filled in still. And I think there's still going to be moves to be made here in the off season. But, before you know it, February is going to be here. We're going to be showing up to Tampa and you're going to see Juan Soto in a Yankee uniform.
It's pretty wild. He posted, I don't know if you saw, he posted this cool video on Instagram where he's in there in his Padres uniform and he takes a swing, and then the video is kind of from the side and the back, and when he turns, you know, and you're seeing the back of him, now you're seeing it in the Yankees pinstripes.
That's
and it's
awesome.
Just like, it's going to be special. I mean,
I will say, it was during our company holiday party when his Zoom press conference took place. So I like stepped out in the hall at the Times Square Hard Rock trying to listen in to hear what he was saying. I caught most of it, but just seeing him in the Yankee hat, I'm like, man, this just looks like a perfect fit. So I'm very optimistic and, if you can't tell, very, very excited to see Juan Soto in 2024 here in the Bronx.
I'm pretty sure that while that press conference was happening, I was dodging, you know, hurricane-style rain in Cozumel. So I did not. But I will take your word for it. Nate, though, obviously, we are recording this on Wednesday. Tomorrow is the first day of winter, officially.
Or as we call it in my household, perpetual illness season.
There you go. Yeah. We both have kids about the same age. I think we both know this pretty well, but
we know the drill.
We got Christmas coming up, and then, Nate, we have the Bad Boy Mowers Pinstripe Bowl.
Yes.
University of Miami against your alma mater, Rutgers University. It is, you know, it's just always so fun when I was talking to someone who works with us today, and you show up that morning, and you're not used to driving in and seeing like tailgating fans.
Yeah. Or hearing like marching bands in the distance warming up.
It's different.
It's really cool. I love seeing the college football pageantry and vibe come to Yankee Stadium, you know, at the end of December every year. It's such a great event. And, you know, I recommend it to people all the time. I'm like, if you've never been to a football game at Yankee Stadium, you got to do it once, because you never know who you're going to see or what you're going to see. You know, we just had the official game programs for the Pinstripe Bowl delivered here this week, and there's a 2-page spread in there that lists all the Pinstripe Bowl alumni who are on current NFL active rosters, and there's some impressive names in there. So, you know, I can pretty much guarantee you that if you come here on December 28th and see Miami versus Rutgers, you're going to see at least probably a handful of guys who are going to be playing on Sundays in the NFL next year or in a couple years. You know, there's also a page that lists the every college football game that's ever taken place at Yankee Stadium going back to 1923. And there's some really impressive games on that list as well. So you just never know when you're going to see history or when you're going to see something special. And it's just really cool to see Yankee Stadium as a college football venue.
We've had a couple overtime games here. We've had even some that weren't overtime, but were like one possession. We had a walk-off extra point in the first one I ever went to, which is still one of the weirder feats I've seen on a football field, a walk-off extra point. But man, it's a really cool event. I always look forward to it.
I have not missed a Pinstripe Bowl yet, and I don't plan to because it's always a great day.
It is. I love college football. It's probably my favorite sport other than baseball. I love pageantry, and I love marching bands. You know, we just listed the three things, and both these teams have been here before. Miami was here a couple of years ago when they played Wisconsin. Rutgers, I believe, has been in two Pinstripe Bowls, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep, this will be their third.
Have they played a regular season game here? Remind me.
Yes, they played Army.
Army, that's right. Mm-hmm. So, obviously, it's always good when you have a local audience. I think what's really fun about this bowl matchup is, and I think Greg Schiano agrees with me, Greg Schiano, of course, the Rutgers head coach, usually in bowl games, when you're a northern team, you're going somewhere south and hoping that you get some fans there. It's not that often a Rutgers gets to basically be the home team for a bowl game. So that's a nice little advantage they have.
Yeah, right up the road. Very easy. If you're a Rutgers student, you hop on the train down there in New Brunswick. You'll be here in a heartbeat and get here early. Experience the atmosphere. Come check out the now world famous Rutgers marching band, fresh off their performance in the Thanksgiving Day parade.
There you go. So that is Thursday, December 28th at 2:15. Nate, that is a wrap on our 2023. I think that certainly there were really exciting moments. We got to watch Garrett Cole win the Cy Young together. We got to watch, I mean, just at any at bat that you get to see Aaron Judge is a reward and a treat. The season didn't go amazingly. It was disappointing in a lot of ways, but I certainly speak for myself. I think I speak for, you know, everyone in our department that the rewards that we get from getting to talk about this stuff, getting to write about this stuff, getting to share this stuff, not even when is on a cruise ship, even when we are sitting in an office in the Bronx, I feel incredibly fortunate to have people who want to read what we write and hear what we say.
No doubt. I feel the same way, John. It's always great to be able to share some of the stories from that go on here, try and take people, you know, inside the clubhouse, down into the dugout a little bit. And yeah, looking forward to a great 2024. I think it's going to be a special year here in the Bronx.
So whether you're celebrating Christmas next week or Kwanzaa or anything else, or like, you know, me and my Jewish family, we're probably going to get Chinese food and see a movie, something on Christmas, whatever your tradition is, this is just the best time of the year. Enjoy it. Have a wonderful new year. And we look forward to speaking with you on the other side.
Hi, this is Jose Trevino. For more stories like these, be sure to pick up Yankees Magazine. You can get a copy the next time you're at the ballpark or by calling 800-GO-YANKS. Or visiting yankees.com/publications. Thanks for listening.
The New York Yankees official podcast is a production of the Yankees Magazine Podcast Network. It's produced by me, John Schwartz, with assistance from the entire team at Yankees Magazine, as well as incredible support from the New York Yankees Media Relations Department, in particular Jason Zillow, Michael Margolis, and Caitlin Brennan. Thanks also to our awesome social media team, Ryan Callahan, Julia Shore, and Alex King. If you're not subscribed, what are you waiting for? We're available wherever you listen to your podcasts or at yankees.com/podcasts. Leave us a review, leave us a rating. You can even send us your thoughts over email, podcasts@yankees.com. For more information about the stories we discussed today, visit yankees.com/magazine, where you can read all of our long-form content. If you'd like to subscribe to Yankees Magazine or purchase individual copies of the magazine, yearbook, media guide, or anything else, please visit yankees.com/publications or call us at 800-GO-YANKS. Of course, you can also stay up to date on everything happening here at the stadium by following us on Twitter @Yanks Magazine or by liking us on Facebook @Yankees Magazine. That's it. See you next time, and go Yanks.